Yeah, so first of all, I want to thank the organizers to include me in this program. It's really great. So I want to tell about some ideas we had about using composite fermions for describing two-dimensional bosons in some special cases. So I think the title is a bit ambitious, but nevertheless, I'll write it, and then we'll see how far we'll get before I bore you to death or you just start talking about it. So it will come soon. And basically, I wanted to cover probably in kind of cursory way a few papers that we had with Tigran Sindrakyan. And Alex Kamina. And I won't give the full references, but it's PRA 2012. There was some rapid communication in PRB and relatively recent PRL. Actually, what we started with was looking at the ground state of repulsive bosons. Which have spin orbit coupling for individual particles in 2D. And then we kind of progressed to low density bosons on, again, I use this word. And finally, we looked. Yeah, so hardcore bosons in some sense are like spins, right? So you have constraint on a single side if it's a lattice, and commutation. They commute on different sides, so they behave like spin 1/2. So one can map an XY model onto hardcore bosons. So this is also somewhat like, actually exactly like XY model in strong field in the direction, so that the low density of bosons corresponds to almost full polarization of spins. Turns out that turning off field is difficult, but I hope we did it. And this is the third part, which I'll cautiously call putative chiral spin liquid. For S equals 1/2 spins on a honeycomb lattice of next nearest neighbor's honeycomb. So that's basically what I would like to cover. So I'll start just with a simple intro. Reminding what is the spectrum of three bosons. For example, for a single particle in 2D with Rajba spin orbit. The single particle Hamiltonian is just the kinetic energy, so it's dx squared plus dy squared. The spin orbit term, the strength is characterized by some parameter that has units of velocity, so I'll just call it v. And then z is unit vector normal to the plane. sigma cross grad. So basically, sigma is in plane spin x, y, right? Because this guy makes sigma z relevant. So the sign of v is, if it's a material, it depends on the material. But well, there are no bosons probably in material. So we thought about, actually, this question started from cold datums and what is called synthetic gauge field arrangements that can be done with some tricky things with lasers. But the system boils down to an assembly of bosons that have some internal degree of freedom that can be treated as spin and described here by sigma. And basically, one can confine these bosons to a plane. And this is a Hamiltonian, and V is just determined by some polarizations of laser lights, which I don't care about at this point. So it's easy to diagonalize, just find the spectrum. And obviously, there'll be two bands because one can, for given momentum, you can take direction of spin looking left or right with respect to the direction of momentum in plane, right? So for these two bands, this spectrum will be k squared over 2m plus or minus vk. And k here is a two-dimensional vector. So again, these two bands correspond to spin looking up or down in plane, and z is looking at you. So if I draw the energy as a function of vector of k, so we'll start with, say, kx. It's a shifted parabola. And then you take this curve and just rotate around the vertical axis, which is energy, right? And it will be kx, ky. And then this part, the dashed part, will create kind of a cone with the sharp point as a minimum. And this one will create a spectrum where there is a minimum on some circle of radius k0. So this k0 is basically mv. So the spectrum of the lower band that corresponds to one of the directions of spin has a minimum of equally low values of energy. The radius of the circle is mv, depends on the spin-weight interaction. So basically, that's the mode. Okay, so this line of minima is a mode, and I hope you'll agree with me soon that it's a reasonable metaphor. So now the wave functions, they are spin-offs, and if we pick, say, spin down component as one, then the spin up component is momentum dependent, and it's I plus or minus e to I k e to argument k e to I k r. So now, there's a compact way to write these two components. Actually, for a generic wave function, if we know the lower component, we can get the upper component by a convolution. where R is the function over R squared, and there is minus 1 over 2 pi. So we'll see in a second that actually the spinor structure does create some problems, but they can be alleviated by noticing that basically if we do something to the lower components, if we create some combinations of wave functions for the spin down, we can restore the spin up component by applying the convolutions with this some standard function. Okay, so so far it's just free particles. Then one may introduce interaction, and because the problem kind of appeared from cold atoms, it's a local interaction. So particles ij interact only if they are nearby. So it's contact. And in general, interactions depend on spin, and there are two constants, g0, g2. So g0 should be repulsive. G2 may depend, the sign may depend on conditions, how the system is arranged. What else with interaction? So the first thing that comes to mind is that let's see whether the ground state is Bose condensate, and of course, this idea was carried through literature for quite a while. So here, the line of minima of energies are this circle, right? And
why is the interaction Ising-like?
Yeah, so once again, so for there is no special reason for that. For the cold atoms, that's how things work, but probably one can consider more general things.
So those are spin, they are like a nuclear spin?
Pardon?
I mean, so those are spin, they are.
No, spin is not, well, it's relatively hyperfine, of course, but it's some label that corresponds to degenerate atomic state. So
there's no particular reason why the interaction must be Ising-like.
No. It's there is no reason. And I said that it doesn't play too much role for me either. So I didn't pay attention to this. If we just try the plain vanilla bosonization, Bose condensation, then you pick a point on the circle, right? Right away, you break inversion symmetry. And also, for that reason, time reversal symmetry as well. For weak interactions, the energy of Bose condensate with all bosons sitting at some point on the circle will be number of particles times density over 2m times g0. Turns out that this may or may not be the lowest energy state in this class of states where we try to condense particles on some discrete manifold. A number of papers tried something else, and most comprehensive probably, there were two papers of Wang et al. And Wu et al. I think it's the same year, 2010. Several papers in PRB, PRL as well. The alternative tried was kind of spin density wave where you put particles into linear combination of two states. And in this case, the interaction energy is n times n over 2 m times g0 plus g2 over 2. There is some exchange term. And basically, they claimed phase diagram in parameter space looked as follows. So here is the density. Here is g2. And you see that depending on the sign of g2, one of these two win. This was considered to be spin density wave. And this was this BCS, which I've called time reversal symmetry broken state. So what we think actually is happening is that although we have no argument against this state at higher densities, but if the interaction is weak, at least, we believe that there is a region of small densities. This scales as the interaction strength, where there is some new state. This new state actually is described by, as you will see, by a composite, some kind of composite fermions. So for those who want to go sleep in 10 minutes, tell that the chemical potential, so here the chemical potential scales as n, right? And for the new phase, we claim chemical potential will scale as n to power 3/2. And at small densities, this is lower than this. So energy per particle for the state that we proclaim is lower. So maybe it's not true state, but at least this is not true state either.
This may be a very unimportant question, but should I worry whether the delta function interaction is even well defined? I mean, for continuum, many particles, quantum mechanics with quadratic dispersion, 2D having a delta function isn't quite defined.
Right, you know, I know what you mean.
It works at mean field level, but the corrections will involve cut off always.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think that. So when I'm saying delta function, I mean there is some scattering amplitude. Okay, so in this respect, I don't think there is a problem, and I agree that in the conventional. Yeah, so I'll tell you. So in the conventional 2D, this conventional aspect would be squared over 2m. Okay. The renormalization of the interaction constant to the scattering amplitude is logarithmic. It's somewhat tricky, and that leads basically to although Costa-Westerlitz does happen, but the Costa-Westerlitz temperature gets double logarithmically renormalized, and it was. So I was mentioning the Russian tradition. So Popov was the first, but but actually, if you want to read about it, the best paper I know is actually Danny Fisher and in Hohenberg, where the things are really explained well. For this spectrum, things are even worse because the manifold of minima is kind of big. A similar program of renormalizations of the amplitude, to some extent, was performed by Sarang and can I pronounce it?
Gopalakrishnan.
Yes, and Lamacraft. It's an interesting paper where the first part is quite clear, and they do this program basically of evaluation of amplitude, and everything is Stolmachov logarithm, everything is quite clear. And this part basically leads to some renormalization of the amplitude, but if I remember right, up to a logarithm, you are getting still this n, maybe divided by log n, but nothing dramatic. Whereas it claims something more.
I think you would get square root. So the strongest will be log caps for 2D reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the length of minima, there is a square root.
You mean it's square
root? The scattered length vanishes as a square root of mu.
My recollection is that it's still, they don't get n to 3 halves. They have something weaker than that. So you're saying that it's n times n square root n.
So g0 is replaced by something like a square root of mu times log.
Yes.
So the power will be...
maybe right. So is it maybe g to 3 halves times logarithm? Is that what you're saying?
Could be, I don't remember exactly. Actually, we did this, you know, this paper.
Right. It was a term argument.
Yeah. And I think we had a square instead of 3 half, but I have to check.
No square, let's say I can bet, but.
Okay. But at least not lower than that. Not lower than.
Not lower than?
A 3 half.
Let's check it. Okay, so I'm not sure.
Can you say a few more words about
how
kind of universal symmetry breaking
base
over there?
Yes, so I think it's universal symmetry broken because you have some finite k.
Just a combination of 1k points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here it's a 2. So now the main idea of it will be erected somewhat improved, but the crude idea is that if you imagine for a sec that you replace bosons by fermions, then basically you fill up these fermions the bottom. Of this spectrum, so you fill up the mode by liquid. It's a mode, and the Fermi momenta are k naught plus minus 2 pi n over k naught. It's at small density, so basically this kf plus minus are these points. The density of states for this thing is one-dimensional, right? Because you have minimum on a line, so the spectrum is curved only in one direction, in radial direction. It's like one-dimensional. In terms of stat-mech, it's like one-dimensional system. So that leads to chemical potential of fermions. Behaving as pi n squared over 2m k naught squared, that's basically the starting point of what we try to figure out. That basically for BEC it's n, for fermions it's n squared. The crossing point depends, of course, on interaction. Here the energy is lower, and it's kind of strange that the energy of fermions is lower than bosons, because we kind of intuitively would say that a fermion system is more rigid, so why does it happen? We think it happens basically because there is no Bose condensation, at least at small densities. Now, there are some ramifications because of the spin structure, I'll try to be quite short on that because it's not crucial, but still. So the thing is that when we start with delta function in full 2D space, and then we project onto the wave functions that correspond to the lower band, say this plus here, then delta function stops to be delta function, of course, because you don't expand it in full basis, you expand only in part. And though what remains true is that if I take two particles moving in the same direction, then they don't interact. I mean, two fermions don't interact. So interaction is not contact for fermions in the lower band of spin orbit spectrum, but it's still such that for particles moving in the same direction, there is no interaction. Now, if I forget about bosons for a few minutes and consider fermions, then basically this is a problem that was considered with these kind of interactions by Radner, Berg, well, Berg, Radner, and Kivelson in 2012, almost the same time as we looked at this problem as well. The conclusion is that basically, if you try to do Hartree Fock, then instead of filling up the mode, rather one creates a puddle of some angle theta and fill it with fermions. And that's because by confining the region where the fermions live, you suppress the interaction strengths. So I'll dwell on it a bit more. So for two particles, projection on the lower band leads to energy which depends on the angle between momenta as sine squared phi. So again, phi is angle between two wave vectors. Basically, if I do Hartree Fock, then there is an interaction term in the energy. And let's consider theta small. Then interaction term will be scaling as theta squared, while kinetic energy term will scale as n squared over theta squared. And that simply comes from the fact that when I squeeze fermions to smaller phase space, the chemical potential raises. So that's why theta is in the denominator. So then you write sum of these two and optimize for theta. Okay, so again, when you squeeze fermions, you increase kinetic energy, but at the same time, for the specific interaction, you decrease interaction energy, and there is some optimum. That's what basically was in the paper of Berg et al. As a result, theta, this angle, scales as n over g, or g's interaction. Well, actually, it's g naught plus g2, if I remember right, to power 1/4. Chemical potential scales as n to power 3/2 times g naught plus g2. So actually, this is a full formula up to numerical constant. So that's basically the fermion, the fermionic result for particles with the same spin orbit spectrum. So now we have the question, okay, so whether there is a way to map bosons onto fermions. And if there would be no spin, then there is a construction of flux attachment that was refined by a number of people starting, I don't know, starting or not, but there was a paper by Rova Schaefer and Wilczek, 85, and then Zhang, Hansen, Hewison, 89, and then Halpern, Reed, and Lee in 93 that did it for fractional quantum Hall effect. So mapping fermions on bosons or fermions on fermions. So there is some caveat for our case because the bosons in our case have spin, but what one can do the following. We can apply the usual construction to psi down, and then introduce psi up by this raising operator as many times as we want to flip spins. And that is good because we will this way we will keep ourselves in the in one of the bands. So if you want to be in the lower band, for example, we take sine minus here, and it would be this signs for r, and we know that this way the construction will only use wave functions from the lower energy states. So this is one thing. So let me just write down the wave function for all spins down. It will be a projection, sorry, a product of all r less than j times a Fermion function. And then for if I want to flip spins, I'll use this and I will not rewrite it. Yep.
I mean, if you just wanted to simplify the problem, would it make a difference if you just took a model that didn't have spin, which just had a, you know, just had a dispersion, which was you know, Mexican hat style, minus k squared plus k to the fourth?
Yes. Good. I'll switch to this quite. Soon, the difference, I just wanted to be clear here. So the difference is that the interaction that we have here is after projection is not local. And this is the only reason I'm doing it. But other than that, you're right. It's,
so before that, can you just say what the phase diagram is then for the model that you just talked about? So you're talking about a fermionic phase at low density.
Yes.
Then is there a BEC or is there just SDW then?
Okay,
so. Is there any regime where you have a BEC or is it completely replaced by?
No, we cannot argue that there is no BEC because of this graph. So we have a purely, you know, brute energy, not brute force, but brute energy argument, and we show you a state that has.
I think Nandini is asking a simpler question: whether the so in your diagram you have a region at higher density where
yes,
where I guess the mean field is supposed to be okay.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But those are BECs, right?
Yes.
They also have some other structure.
I see. Those are BECs, but also have some spin density wave.
Yeah, so this one is this. Yeah. And this one is this.
Okay.
A bit non-pedagogical. okay. Right. And this is a composite form. And jumping ahead. So basically, that's a right question about phase diagram. We have some arguments that this is first order, because basically you break two symmetries, time reversal, and also there is escape and escape. And this one may be a continuous, but then again we have some brute energy argument, and it looks like it's first order, but it's speculative. So basically, I think I'll skip details just in the interest of time, but indeed one can establish the relation between the Bose function and Fermi function of this type, and then the price for it is that for fermions there is the gauge field that one.
One yep. More question. So since you had equal numbers of up and down spins, you have no net flux, right? I mean, you are
well, numbers rather than.
I mean, like when you started your original Hamiltonian, mm-hmm. you have now bosons with spins, but there are equal numbers of up and down spins. So now you're converting each boson into a fermion with that sort of string attached to it. But you shouldn't have any net flux, right?
Yeah, so I'm not sure answering your question, but the thing is that I'm somewhat apprehensive to tell that there are two directions of spin, because I'm already in one bend, right? So there is some spin state, some spin texture, whatever it's called.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, but it's S state, okay. Right? And then this S state is mapped onto spinless fermions.
Okay.
And probably should have, I didn't give this,
I understand.
This
so, now
so carefully, so I don't
down
know.
Down is basically the lower band.
Right, it's lower band, yeah. So it's a, I was too careful to explain how to map it on free on spinless fermions, but that's basically what I'm doing, right? So the resulting model mm-hmm. Is spinless fermions in a gauge field.
Right, okay.
So basically, the free part of the Hamiltonian, so to speak, so without interactions, is the long derivative squared, and there is interaction, the vector potential in components is basically this gauge potential produced by the factors that permute statistics. So one can probably I'll skip the details, but what we did is probably has the same legitimacy as what was done for fraction Kuhn Hall effect. So we replace this the fluctuating field that depends on all coordinates, as we see, by a homogeneous field, right? So before that, I can write that there is VFR, which is curl A. And it's sum of delta functions, and what we do, we replace it by 2 pi n, where n is the density. So that's kind of the most drastic thing that is done in the consideration, and I apologize for that, but you can't do much better than that. So after that, basically, what one can do is a mean field construction with including all interactions and quantizing fermions in this effective magnetic field. So as a result, one gets field Landau level, up to a coefficient, we are getting this expression for the chemical potential. So that's basically the logic, and that's the result. Yep.
Fully filling level.
Yes. So yes, because we go from bosons to fermions.
Then wouldn't it be incompressible with this?
True.
But it looks like the. I mean, there you were giving a chemical potential, which looks like.
The chemical potential is still there, right? So.
The compressibility is TNB mu.
No, so. There is no lattice, right? So. When you're saying incompressible, you think of keeping the magnetic field fixed and changing density. But here, magnetic field is density.
Well, I'm thinking of the whole state, the state of the bosons.
Yeah. So if you're defining compressibility in the usual way, DADN, it's a compressible state. It is a compressible state.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can get a compressible state.
Pardon? How you get compressible state?
Because, I mean, in a quantum Hall case, you always get
incompressible. Yes, in quantum Hall case, you have external magnetic field. Your magnetic field external, given by a solenoid. Doesn't care about what density you have in your sample. Mm-hmm. Okay? Then, keeping the field constant, you're trying to change the density in your sample. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you encounter a gap. So here, there is no magnetic field from outside. It's spontaneously generated in such a way that B equals N. So you change N, you change B. And you're still sitting on the field of knowledge. There are lots of systems that do have a gap at the Fermi level, for example, superconductivity. Okay, so.
I'm just something more basic.
Yeah, even more basic.
The Hamiltonian there, that's just for free particle with quadratic dispersion. Should one not be using the mode dispersion?
Yes, no, that's very good, yeah. Less basics. Yes, so, and that's because I kind of try to speed through. So, the thing is that we first do Hartree-Fock with having taking into account interaction. Okay, so that results in the spectrum that describes this situation. So, in addition, thank you very much.
One component of this mass is.
Yes. Yeah. So this mass is not actually the original mass. Okay. So thanks. It's square root m times my and my. It depends on the interaction. I'll try to tell how, but I don't remember. Yeah, my is m times k naught squared over g times n. Times 4. Yes, so the order of steps we made is that first you take into account the direction and do Hartree-Fock, you find spectrum, effective spectrum, that is already not mode, but an anisotropic parabola, and then quasi-classically quantized. Okay, so that's a fun print.
Okay. Maybe I can follow up on Mason's question. So you're saying that you fill up a Landau level?
Yeah.
So if you integrate, so the composite fermions are gapped?
Say again?
The composite fermions are gapped?
If you look at the, I think that if you look at the excitation, without changing the density, just look at the excitations in the system, I think there is a gap, yes.
So if you integrate them out, what is the response you get for the capital A gauge field?
If I integrate them out, so you're talking about which component of the gauge field, the zero component or this one, or A?
Is there a Chern-Simons term generated? Total. So I guess you have a Chern-Simons term from the flux attachment, and
yes.
Then you integrate the fermions out. So what is the total response to A that you get at the end of the game?
Yeah, I think that for this system, Chern number is 1, so whatever it means for the response to A.
And then you also have a 1/2 from initial, or you have 1 from initial flux attachment.
Right, it's 1 from initial.
So do they cancel or not?
I think they cancel, yes.
But then it means it's a super, some kind of superfluid state.
Look, maybe. The thing that we tried, I don't know how to really calculate correctly response functions. So that's, if you're asking about whether there are modes, yes, there is a mode because you can, there are sound modes here, of course, and sound is anisotropic. But whether it's sufficient to get it superfluid, I don't know.
I'm a little confused also here because I thought you were heading toward destroying the superfluid by this mapping, right?
I didn't say superfluid. I didn't pronounce this word ever.
Okay. No, I'm saying you originally you had bosons, so you know,
yes,
you might expect they would become a B, C.
Yes.
But then you made that energetic argument to say that at low densities, it would look like, you know, a fermionic, a composite fermionic state could be more stable. And then I thought this transformation was taking you from bosons to fermions, and so you would somehow justify that the fermionic state was the ground state.
That's what I'm trying to do, you see.
That's what you're trying to do, but I kind of lost your thread somewhere here, where after you did the flux attachment, mm-hmm, you now have a fermionic,
yes,
state with fluxes,
yes,
so it's like the quantum Hall effect.
Well, it's true, but now
are you, so what is the conclusion about the final state then?
I make only a conclusion about the energy of the final state.
Okay.
And the energy of the final state per particle scales as density to power 3/2. That's all the statements that are written. Okay. Now, if you want to verbal statements that are not written,
you also, I guess, conclude
that's
something about the breaking of rotational symmetry.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Breaking rotational symmetry and time-reversal symmetry, for that matter.
I mean, your new phase is drawn there. That's a composite fermions, which is filling the band like the that way.
Yes, yeah,
that's
right.
The,
yeah. And you do break time-reversal and you do break
the rotational symmetry. So you fix the density. So I'm not sure what the sound wall you're talking about has to be just changing the shape of your fermions. Looking like that.
Sound mount is
good. No, you do have some more words in isotropic because.
But how could you do that? Because all of this B, is that density 2 pi n is the density?
Yeah,
n is the density.
N is the density.
Right. You're saying that it's.
You look at small fluctuations of densities.
So it's compressible.
It's compressible, yeah, that's my point.
Yeah,
that it's compressible because when you change density, you change B. So,
right.
In this respect.
But I thought that you said incompressible initially. So you can change the density of those as well as anisotropic and then also the longitudinal and all of those.
It's a liquid. So there is one, as far as I understand, there is one sound mode. But it has, in the liquid, you don't have transverse sound, I'm sorry. But the spectrum is anisotropic.
Yes.
Because they broke already the symmetry. The spectrum the spectrum in this direction is linear, and in this it's more it's softer, it's quadratic, if I remember right.
It sounds suspiciously like the state is actually just smoothly connected to the time reversal symmetry breaking state.
You mean to
just
this one?
Just condense it there, yeah, because.
It is very similar, right?
For most of the properties are kind of qualitatively the same. The question, which is not obvious from what you presented, is whether it has off-diagonal orange order. But I think the usual Chern-Simons arguments, like Max was talking about, would tell you it does.
So your point is that in terms of long-range order, is this the same as TRSB or what's it?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's, you're kind of just deforming this thing, which is kind of condensed at 1K.
I totally with you that, because there is a flat direction, particles don't want to sit in the same point in space, in momentum space. I agree with it. I simply don't know a construction except this one, how to describe it.
I'm just asking a question. I mean, can it be that there's no phase boundary?
Oh,
on the left side of that picture. Yeah.
So you basically collapse all of those composite points.
Right.
That's mean field, right? That's mean field.
Yes. Yeah.
Equations around that, you would already introduce something.
Possibly.
Maybe these are just approaching the same state from
that
direction.
No, I have an argument against it.
But they're really like post-metal, right?
Well, not exactly Bose-Metal because there is a gap for excitations, right? So that's, I think, what people don't like about it. It may be a superfluid, yes, but I don't know whether it's superfluid. It's not Bose-Metal, though.
Could it be Bose-Metal?
Pardon?
Well,
I think that I don't know what Bosmetal is, but I think that in general, Linger is something without a gap, right, for excitations. And here there is a gap. Gap for excitations, not Demudian. Again, DEDN is continuous, everything's fine. But for excitations, there is a gap. So, do we have another 15 minutes, 20 minutes?
So, what is the nature of excitations?
Again, if we believe this construction, it's just part of the whole pairs, right?
Because DEDN is finite, that means there must be some gapless excitation and some is gapless. Otherwise, I mean, if all excitations are gapped, you cannot have DEDN.
Well, look, I mean, again, in superconductivity,
you have
you
some.
You do have here, you also have sound.
Exactly, so there are some gapless excitations.
Yes, yes.
They're just the fluctuations of this
gauge. I mean, look, for, but I mean, for that you don't have to have any signs, right? So if you have compressible system, you write what we call incorrectly hydrodynamics or long wavelength expansion, and you'll get everything. You'll get spectrum, and I agree with that, actually, the spectrum looks, I think actually the same as for the excitations, as for this mode. It's linear in one direction, quadratic in another direction. But in this respect, there is no difference.
Does it compare good to the last point?
Pardon?
You want to talk about the...
I would like to talk about spinless, actually. And I'll, now I have all the ingredients, so it will be faster. And if I have another, what's it? Yeah,
so is the conclusion that there's no phase boundary in that phase diagram between TRSP and C?
Yeah, I have no argument about this boundary. I think there should be a boundary, but I have no strong argument. Because in terms of symmetry, again, it has the same traits. So what I wanted to tell next is that there's wide class of lattices where this mode thing also happens. An example actually is honeycomb with next nearest neighbors hopping, where a single particle Hamiltonian can be written in this form, and the T matrix is a hopping matrix between the sublattices. Therefore, I write it as 2 by 2, where G is sum over three vectors, and I'll just draw in a second these three vectors. So the elementary cell of honeycomb can be drawn this way. If you want to have honeycomb, basically it's this thing. These are, say, lattice A, and this is B, and there are three vectors, which I call E1, E2, E3, which are the nearest neighbors, connecting nearest neighbors. And then there are A1, A2, A3 vectors, which are next nearest neighbors. And the hopping matrix can be written in this way, where basically T corresponds to these hubs, and T squared will produce these hubs. So if we solve for spectrum, we'll find bands. Which have the following spectrum, GK squared. The mode corresponds to condition GK equals T1 over, epsilon T1 over T2. And well, depending on the energy, it may circle around gamma point or k point. So if T2 or T1 is less than something, say 0.3, but I don't remember precisely the threshold, then there is a curve around gamma point in k-space where the energy is minimal and equal on all the points of the line. So one can put hardcore bosons on this lattice, and if the density is low, then we can try to basically recycle what we discussed. I mean, but there's some caveat because it's a lattice, so the flux attachment should be done in well, a bit more carefully. So basically, the boson operator will become a fermion times exponent over all lattice sites different from the given site. Argument r minus r tilde n r tilde, where n here is the occupation number. So n is C dagger C. Now, if we put it into the Hamiltonian and work out the matrix elements, basically the Hopping matrix element between R and R prime is replaced by TRR prime times exponent and this gauge vector potential is sum over R tilde phi R tilde R prime and R tilde. So phi is the angle at which points R prime are seen from point R tilde. And all these points are on the lattice. So now a miracle, maybe it has some explanation, but the interesting thing that the algebraic structure of this Hamiltonian is preserved. So after you do this flux attachment procedure, you still can write H as T1T plus T2T squared, but only the matrix elements of T are getting dressed. So that immensely simplifies all the consideration. Now, one thing that is somewhat unusual is that even if we assume, and we do assume very soon, that n, the density, doesn't fluctuate. Okay, so we replace at some point n by average n. Still, it leads to a modulation of fluxes through the lattice. So the basically the flux defined by this A's for homogeneous occupation of all the sites is sitting here, where nu is occupation factor of the lattice, and flux for this thing is zero. If I separate it on the average flux plus the inhomogeneous one, the structure of this inhomogeneous one will be exactly like in Haldane's construction, just precisely the same thing, same distribution of fluxes. So again, what What we did next for this system is that having this spectrum and having and understanding that this last construction, as I said, that when you dress up matrix elements with the gauge field, the structure remains the same. It means that if I replace n by a constant, I can simply use this spectrum, which will depend on phi, on the flux. Yep.
So what you just said about the flux only being there through the big triangle and zero in the other one,
yeah,
is that just a gate choice?
No, it's not a choice. So again, if I take density not fluctuating but just equal to average density, okay, and then I can simply calculate this A's, because here's the formula and here's the definition of angle. Mm-hmm. That's what I find.
I see.
Okay. So in this respect, now you may say that okay, there is still a choice because I can add arbitrary number of 2 pi's. That's true. And jumping like 3 minutes ahead, if I have nu equals 1/2, then actually the flux here is 2 pi and it's equivalent to zero. So, but again, I specifically looking now at small occupations. That's, I mean, for being to some extent confident in what I'm saying, I have to look at densities are not 1/2 so far, and let's look at low densities. So then again, what I do is the following thing. So we have this spectrum without flux, and I can introduce the semiclassical quantization like in theory of metals with some bizarre Fermi surface, right? So what one does is the following. You have the definition of the equi-energy contour in space, so it boils down to gk equals g, where g is in my hand so far. Then I can find the area of under, so I have a mode, right? So I can find an area that corresponds to this value of g and quantize this area in Bohr-Sommerfeld way. And kappa, it's a Berry phase. It depends on whether it's point gamma or point k, and it's 1 or 0. But basically, it's Bohr-Sommerfeld condition. Out of here, I find g, and then I find spectrum as a function of flux. That's basically the entire thing. And the unusual part is that because the Bohr spectrum has this strange structure, the energy levels as a function of flux behave in an unusual way. So basically, unlike the conventional Landau fan, we just give you, you know, all the straight lines going from zero up. They do something like this. So they go down and up, and that's because of the because of the spectrum that has minimum at finite k. So as an example, if T2 over T1 close to 1, the spectrum is function of phi and number L is this, and you can just check that it has this idiotic shape. So again, what does it mean for the observable quantity? So here indeed it becomes this question about compressibility does become reasonably sensible because we have a lattice, right? So unlike the previous case where magnetic field we just were tuning with n, here there is something that fixes certain densities, namely Brillouin vector. Okay. So indeed, in this case, there is a sequence of incompressible states that can be found in semiclassical approximation, but basically from the equation. And what we think happens is that if we have this lattice and keep increasing the density of bosons from zero, we go in sequence between incompressible states. Okay, and if we don't hit an incompressible state, then we have a combination of two nearest incompressible states. So basically, this picture, which is not very good, but if we hit the proper density, we're sitting here. But if our density is between this one and this one, then we may do Maxwell construction and having a separation on two phases. So that's our understanding of the system. Now, we think that assuming n fixed, not fluctuating from side to side, is a reasonable assumption because the spectrum actually is gapped. Okay, so the next Landau level sits above. So basically, there is a gap that, in our view, should suppress the fluctuations of n. And it's good as long as nu is small. But if, and it's infinitely bad when nu is equal to 1/2. Because if nu equals 1/2, then it corresponds to absence of the field. And there is no gap. So now, the last and actually the most interesting part is actually this case of nu equals 1/2. So we were kind of going along this boson line, and then David Hughes actually mentioned that there was a numerical simulation of Zhu and White and this Hughes participation, and what they were finding for XY model on Honeycomb in zero magnetic field is that there is a modulation staggered magnetization along z direction. So again, in my view, it's amazing. So you have an XY model, okay, and if the exchange constants are tuned in a certain way, namely if the ratio of the next nearest neighbors and nearest neighbors hubs, hopping constants, J2, over G1 is between 0.2 and 0.36 in this region, system spontaneously forms staggered magnetization in the direction. So it becomes kind of easing-like, okay? In the direction where there are no kind of interactions, right? So the interaction on the XY plane and some whose speeds look up or down. So I think that actually that may be our way to understand it. Okay, it's numerical fact, we believe it.
Did they find it? Is it a super solid or is it in their numerics? Or is it only Ising or?
I think the little claim was about profile of a Z, so I don't know whether it tried any kind of response. So what would you think they should do? Well, I'll tell you in a second what I think they should do.
Look at XY correlation.
No, they didn't look at it. As far as I know, they didn't. Sorry. In XY correlation, short range.
Short range,
yeah, sorry. XY short range. Oops. But again, I'm not sure it fully characterizes the system. So what we wanted to do is the following. So basically, we took the same construction with Fermionization of hardcore bosons. Okay, and what we want to do now is to set the density, average density, to 1/2. That corresponds to magnetic field zero. I mean, is that clear, right? So. Again, I wouldn't try that, but if you apply magnetic field fully polarized in these directions, it's no bosons at all. When you reduce it to zero, you have half-field bend. Once again, one can do the flux attachment, but what we understood is the following thing, that so far we were fixing n to one value for all the sites. Now we allowed for the simplest, in our view, fluctuation, meaning that we allowed NA to be not equal to NB. So just that. So there are two sublattices, A and B, and we allow the densities to be different. So now in this construction with Haldane fluxes, it's the case when phi average is zero, well, it's 2 pi, but it can equivalent to zero. Then basically we allow, let's maybe take out twiddle here and put just phi. We allow phi to be anything, and we optimize for phi, for the phi. Again, I'll skip details, although they're kind of nice. The scheme is the following, so that we allow some distribution of flux. So it will be some phi, 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 and minus 3 phi here. Calculate spectrum, find the energy, minimize it, see whether the equation for phi have non-zero solutions. The fact of matter that indeed, for this interval, there is a solution with non-zero phi, and it corresponds to the lower energy that, than the trivial one. And there's a little bit of numerics, but trivial numerics. So we have to find spectrum and then fill it with fermions and calculate energy. So the result of it, I'll just draw by hand, but it's pretty simple, is that between 0.2 and 0.36, phi raises quite fast and then stays almost constant, and then it jumps, up, looks like first order, to zero at J2 larger than 0.36 J1. So this is our phi, so what it means for observables. So one thing is that SAZ minus SBZ, so the staggered magnetization is 3 over 2 pi phi. One can find this to be, I don't know, it's 0.26, and it's actually remarkably close to numerics of Zhu, White, and Hughes. We actually, if we predict, is that there must be a chiral order in the system. So if we call these points 1 to 3, there is non-zero value of S1 dot S2 cross S3, which is the usual chiral order parameters, which was introduced when? We'll check that.
Yeah. When we take T.
Okay. It scales as sine phi. So simultaneously with Ising, there must be this thing, which was not checked numerically. We also, if this construction is correct, and indeed the state that creates this staggered order is actually a time reversal broken state with spontaneous field, there must be an edge state. So there must be a gapless excitation at the edge, which we didn't check, requires numerics. The elementary excitation there must be S equals 1/2. So in the bulk, the gap full excitation is s equals 1, of course, but the gapless one must be s 1 half. And in principle, if one does good numerics, one can do the flux insertion, the Laughlin flux insertion construction, which basically is kind of charge pumping from edge to edge, which was done for different lattices. So it was done for Kagame recently by Donna Sheng and Haldane, or some combination. But it was never done for the Honeycomb, especially in this parameter range. So that's basically that's for me the most exciting thing, that actually it looks like this construction of composite fermions does allow, well, maybe does allow to understand, maybe allows to understand the behavior of a quantum magnet. Now, for me, I mean, just for some remark, for me it was basically an extension of 1D system, because in a way, this construction, this argument in 2D is a counterpart of the mapping of bosons onto fermions in 1D, if you just replace this thing by sign, right? So it's how you go from Leibniger model to Tong-Girardot. And this whole thing has this smell, because basically I'm using the fact that the density of states behaves like in 1D. So that was the initial kind of hunch, and we tried to kind of develop it for something useful. So whether it's useful or not, it's up to you. Thanks.
That's a lot of questions.
If I measure the boson density around this minima, would it be how it will be constant?
If you measure, so boson density and fermion density is the same basically. So now minima, you mean in momentum space?
In momentum space, yes.
So what do you mean measuring? Oh, it's occupation numbers.
Occupation numbers.
Right. So. Yes, in if you do semi-classical quantization, so small densities, it's basically you take the occupation numbers of fermions, and that will be the boson distribution as well, because they're identical.
Yeah, I'm asking because there was this old argument by.
Sorry. In real space, they're the same, but then when you convert it, no, sorry, I was wrong. In real space, they're the same. So, to find the Bose distribution function, you start with basically three fermions. Okay, you fill up the states. Okay, then you find the real space function, and then you do whatever you need to do to find the distribution function of bosons. So.
And what would be that distribution function? I explain the reason I'm asking, because you know there was this. In a very naive picture, so there was this old argument by Philip Nozier that it's always unfavorable to fragment the Bose condensate, even if there is a several minima, when you have a finite, when you have fixed density of bosons. Mm-hmm. So when you work with a fixed density of bosons, and the argument was very physical, that, you know, in a very naive field level, if you fragment the condensate, you pay extra exchange,
Because of the sign.
Okay. So.
Right. So your question whether there is a fragmented phase in bosons, right?
Yes.
That's
in this case, does it correspond to some kind of the fragmented Bose condensate, but fragmentation is in a state which is linear in the system size, not.
So again, it's not Bose condensate, so I'm not sure whether I can even map this argument onto them.
So if I take NK and integrate, I should get total number of bosons.
Yes.
So, and if all of them, you know, have finite density, I believe only along this line, then each state is occupied by 1 over square root of.
The fermions, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure I understood. So once again, even for Bose condensates, let's forget about all the stuff. Okay, and for conventional bosons, will be raised. But the spin density wave, which in some case is the lowest energy state, right? It's just two points for bosons, 2 points in space, in momentum space. So is it bad from your point of view for?
No, I don't know. So where this Fock energy goes, if all energies are repulsive.
No, so spin density actually is better for negative G2. So it is the case of Fock energy being not repulsive but attractive.
Actually, I have a question about the trans-Simons construction for that, from bosons to fermions, starting from the mode structure. So it looks like you did flux attachment transformation, sort of assuming that symmetry is broken like that already.
Say again?
So when you're assuming that the symmetry is already broken, so you have this quadratic.
You're talking about this thing?
Yeah. I'm talking about the second part of the talk. So.
So this one, right?
Right. But I.
No layers.
I could do the flux attachment transformation for the original band structure and see whether the grounds that will break the symmetry spontaneously.
Just a second. So you're talking about lattice or no lattice? I'm not sure. Yeah. You're talking about system design?
No lattice.
No lattice.
No lattice. Just.
Right, so then you attach fluxes basically to particles.
Just Mexican head band structure.
Right, so you attach fluxes to particles, right? So I'm not sure I understand.
Right. So then I can do this transformation.
Yeah, so you attach fluxes to particles, no lattice, right?
No lattice, yeah.
Okay.
So then can you show that actually the system spontaneously breaks time reversal and rotation symmetry?
Can I show?
Because it sounded like you're already assuming that symmetry was already broken, and that's why when you do the flux attachment transformation, you didn't use that full band structure, because it was quadratic dispersion.
No, I think I disagree. So once again, so flux attachment is a real space thing. It's not momentum space.
Huh?
Flux attachment procedure is a real space thing.
No, I understand, right?
So that's one thing. Another thing is that whether just for fermions, forget about flux attachment, for fermions, interacting fermions, whether they feel this or because of interaction they want to make this.
Yeah, but by the time you do the flux attachment transformation before you break the symmetry, in that system you also have current interaction in addition to the density interaction. So it's not obvious to me that you will do the same thing.
No, that's I'm not sure I understand. So once again, so what are...
So this statement,
yeah.
The paper you mentioned, Edge Berg and Steve Killerson.
Yeah.
So
there is some interaction that they have, I don't know from where. What sort of therapy?
So for human interaction, say.
Yes, so what I'm saying is that, we do derive interaction. So we start with interaction, which is erased, but it's a... This one, okay, and then when you project on the lower band, it becomes something else, and then when you go from bosons to fermions, it becomes yet something else, and this something else, basically, roughly speaking, changes the sign of exchange interaction from positive to negative, and as a result, for composite fermions moving with the same momentum, there is no interaction. Okay, so once again, so interactions that we have for composite fermions, which leads to this thing, is the result of the flux attachment procedure. It's a result of two things, projection on the lower band and flux attachment. So for bosons, it would be...
So you're saying there was actually the consequence of effective interaction between composite fermions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, that's actually what I had to articulate better.
No other question, then I'd like to thank them.